What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we bring on the Coach's Site legend, founder, man in charge, all around smart guy, delivering great knowledge based to all of us, Aaron Wilbur. Glad to have you, Aaron. How are you today?
I'm good, but I hope somebody else is showing up here to honor that intro. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Well, you have a podcast. You've got the Coach's Site, obviously. You've spoken to some really smart people. So even just by pure osmosis and being around that, what's the rule? Your equivalency to the people you hang around. So
I think it's the people you, the five people you spend the most time with. There's some sort of equation there, which I absolutely believe in. And I will, I'm certainly not the smartest person in any room or on any podcast, but I've will definitely advocate for having benefited from being around some pretty remarkable people in our sport.
Yeah. It's awesome what you've built. You know, I'm excited to be presenting at the Coach's Site live up in Ann
Arbor. We are too, man. We are too. You know, we haven't really gotten into what you're going to talk about. I feel like you're one of those people, like there's a lot of space outside the box where I could see you coming from. So I'm excited. Do you have an idea what you're going to talk about? Do you have any seeds planted yet?
I may already have an outline and all of the points, and I just need to make it look pretty and practice actually presenting it once or twice. So I'm not going to say anything beyond that, but maybe.
Oh man, I love it. We should have like a poll or something where people can like guess or on what Greg's going to talk about.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be really fun.
Yeah.
Because if anyone knows me a little bit, I like to think outside the box a little bit. Just a smidgen.
Miley, but that's you know, but isn't that where the, I don't want to even say the fun lies, but that's the, isn't that where we get better? Like I was watching a presentation yesterday with Seth Godin, and he was just talking, he was pointing out what now seems obvious, but so many things that we just took for granted not too long ago, but when we look at them today, we're like, man, we think completely different. Right. And I think it's so important to acknowledge that in our sport, like so much of the status quo, if we brought that into existence today, or what the status quo was, say, 10 years ago, if we brought that into existence today, people would look at us sideways. But there was a time when that's just the way it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's the social norms and how do you break it? Or even just like, I always love the technology change. Like if you look at goalies back in the day, I'm like, no crap, they gave up a ton of goals. Like if you went down, you get hit in the head and have a serious injury, or like you try moving around with 50 pounds on your feet. Like that's not an easy way to go about it.
You know what? I was having this conversation with one of our staff yesterday, and we're trying to find it. And I'm trying to remember, I think, so we used to do our conference at the old Maple Leaf Gardens, now the Matt and Me Center. And in there, they had this framed photo. It was with Daryl Sittler. I think he got, maybe a quick Google search, it was either 9 or 11 points in the game. It's the NHL record, probably one of those records that'll never be broken, but they had this big frame picture commemorating it. And in the background, so it's like, you're looking like from way up in the bleachers down on the ice behind the net, and there's the goalie. Well, it's like, no shit, he got 9 points. Like the goalie looks like my 4-year-old was in net. Like he looks so small relative to, you know, take your pick of, you know, Vezina candidates this year who are, you know, probably all over 6'3" and 200 pounds. The game's changed. And you're right. Like we used to tell goalies, whatever you do, don't go down. Don't do a reverse VH. That's not going to work out.
Well, talking about things changing and evolving, coaching has changed a ton recently as people have caught on to some really good stuff. So I'm curious for you recently, what have you learned?
Oh, that's, man, that's a great question. So much, you know, what we do day to day at the coaches site moves really fast, and there's not a lot of time to stop and reflect. But when I look back at, the gold nuggets that just for me, when I put my coaching hat on, like what I've learned through this journey, it's remarkable. But I just look at where our games come from. Like we started in 2011. It almost sometimes feel like it was a different sport back then. So to draw back to your question, what have we learned recently? I think we've learned a lot about the power of simplicity in your message. Like I just listened to Jay Woodcroft the other day on Elliot Friedman's podcast, 32 Thoughts, being interviewed, and would encourage anybody who's a coach to go listen to that. But he talked about advice that he got from Paul Maurice. And it's like, you know, when he first went to Edmonton and was handed the reins midseason, it's like, just, you know, you're going to watch tape and you're going to see a million things you want to change. Pick two, maybe three, and just focus there. And then once you establish some consistency and discipline in that area, then you add on a layer. Then you add on a layer from there. And I think that that's probably advice that really lends itself to coaching, but probably lends itself to a lot of endeavors in life if we want to get good at something.
So to summarize, change, maybe not slowly is the right word, like, because you want to make changes, but change one thing at a time. No more than that. If you throw too much at people, it'll just be a train wreck.
Yeah. And how I look at that from a coaching perspective. And again, this is putting my coach's hat on. And so I've coached at a variety of levels. Currently I just wrapped up a season as a U6 head coach with Squamish Minor Hockey. But I think sometimes we say, okay, I'm going to change slowly. Like I'm going to add some things, but before we've even developed any mastery or it's taken hold, we've already added three things. And I think sometimes as a coach, that's the discipline. It's like, can you allow your players the space to actually get good on what you're emphasizing or teaching before you start throwing more things at them? And depending on what level you're coaching, that might be a 1 week window. It might be a one practice window, but it might also be a 1 month window that you got to give your players to let some things sink in.
Well, Now you're talking about being a U6 head coach. Now I'm curious, like, what are you changing at U6 versus maybe what he'll be changing in the NHL? And how does that affect your messaging? How do you coach? Because some of the most brilliant coaches I know are not ones in the NHL. They're the ones doing U6 and U8, but they have completely different styles and ways of going about their business rather than maybe a guy who's doing professional hockey or junior hockey. So I'm curious for you throughout the different ages, like, what makes a great coach at 6U versus peewee versus high school versus junior in college?
Yeah, man. So, I haven't coached in the NHL. I wish I had that on my resume, but I don't. But I've coached, I would say probably if you were to say what's my cozy spot as a coach, it's probably junior hockey, 16 to 20. Like that's the age group and the level of experience I feel really comfortable on the ice with. So when I jumped in with my little guy, it was, frankly, it was intimidating, right? Because now you're like let's call it that shtick you have, that language you use, that way you engage people, it doesn't work. So you're almost swimming. You're like, man, I got to almost reinvent how I deliver the message, but I also have to reinvent how granular I go. And I got to get comfortable with teaching the fundamentals of the fundamentals and going back to it practice after practice, week after week. And I would say the one thing that I've learned about that level is you almost have to, it's kind of like when you see chefs, like they're boiling a pot of a stew or a roux and they've got the spoon and they're just tasting it. And they don't know that they're not going by the clock. They're going by, I'm going to keep tasting it till it's right. And that's what I would equate coaching U6 hockey to. It's like, you kind of have to just say, we're going to start here and we're going to keep evaluating if they get it. And we're not going to move on until they get it. And that means, can they bend their knees? Do they have good posture? That means, you know, when we get them to do a glide turn, are they comfortable being balanced on both feet? Or are they picking one leg up? And then probably just as important is we have to find new ways to go back to those same fundamental skills. We have to continue to make it interesting. I thought like I would do my practice plans at the start and I'm like, okay, we're doing this stations for 10 minutes. And then it was 8 minutes. And then it was 6 minutes. And when it got to 6 minutes, we had to challenge ourselves as coaches and parents to say, we have to do drills that are either we've done before, so we can say the name and the kids know it. But if it's new, if you're doing anything new, only select things that you're confident that you can explain and demonstrate in 30 seconds and get them moving. And if you can't, I don't care if it's the best drill in the world, it's not worth it.
I love that last piece where it's like building to complexity. I see that like that's a common mistake for coaches is they go directly to complexity rather than building to it. Like start with the simple drill and then add pieces into it. And there's a million different examples you can go with, but like whiteboards are dumb. Like I'm now against whiteboards. If you can't explain it simply enough, it's probably too complex, or, you know, you're doing it in too many words. So there's some other areas there. So I think that's one good way to probably test that in your area. Like maybe it's good for the coaches to see it on a picture to see what it's like, but then explaining to the players, can you do it without a whiteboard? Yay or nay? You know, what level of complexity are you going towards?
I couldn't agree more. And I would say that, like, I don't know if I'll ever go back to coaching junior hockey. I hope I do, but I don't know if I will. But if I do, I'll be a way better coach from this experience coaching U6 kids. Another thing that I've learned, like, I think it's our nature as coaches, and we're probably, you know, the coaches say, you know, we're pouring gas on it. We're just throwing ideas at coaches, and it's exciting, right? If you're passionate, you want to go to the rink and you want to try that new drill and teach that new skill and that new detail. And I saw this video and man, I read Greg's newsletter and I want to go implement that today. And I'm guilty of that, of being, you know, wanting to keep things fresh. And what I've learned over time, you know, when I say time, I'm talking like 4 months, is for the kids, like, don't discount, like, if they're engaged with something, the right answer is probably going back to that thing they're engaged with. Or as you said, just tweaking it a little bit. Like, don't try and teach them a new drill. See if you can teach them what you're trying to teach them within the framework of that last drill. And I'll give you examples. So on Mondays, my little guy does, up in Canada, we have can skate. So can skates everywhere. And he goes to can skate. Well, he's been doing this since last spring. So he kind of did a couple months last spring and then he got things rolling again in September. Greg, they do the same practice plan every Monday. And I know that you've got a little one the way and you're going to go through this journey in no time flat, but I'm going to guess that you're like me when you're watching your kid go through a practice and it's the same thing. You're like, oh my God, like, build on it, do something different. Like, this is insanity. But one of the stations, they do three stations every Monday. And one of them is, what time is it, Mr. Wolf? So they got to stop and then they got to turn and skate fast the other way. And it, as much as it drives me crazy, I have to pause and I have to be like, damn, my kid still loves playing. What time is it, Mr. Wolf, every Monday? Like, it doesn't matter what I feel or what I think. If it's teaching him to stop and pivot and skate fast the other way, then just get out of the way.
Get out of the way. Oh man. Adults getting out of the way of kids. What a groundbreaking
It's hard. The litmus test, Greg, is going to be when you, because your newsletter, and I read every single one and it's awesome. It's great. And you preach that, but then it's going to be like, you're going to put a parent hat on in not too long, and then you're going to live it. It's hard to do. And I think as coaches, we all have to acknowledge that when it's through the lens of a parent, all of a sudden, like, as we're not wired to get out of the way. We're wired to be a helicopter and just hover over our kids. Or as coaches, it's human nature. The default is to get in the way, so to speak. We have to be intentional. If we really want to get in the way, if we really want to get out of the way, we have to be intentional about it. And we have to find some frameworks in our own self-talk and how we prepare and plan for things to get out of the way. Because if we don't, we'll just naturally get in the way. That's my experience anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's for coaches and parents alike, right? It's the natural to be there and support But sometimes the best thing is to allow a little bit of tinkering, a little bit of failure, a little bit of fun, rather than we need to be on the ball the whole time and allow that passion to grow. I think if we have the mindset of how do we help this person be more excited about playing hockey, it will open a lot more doors and pathways, and maybe asking ourselves the question, like, would it help what we're about to do? Would it help increase the passion of that child to continue to play and love the sport and be involved with it? I mean, it's a great sport that people play lifelong. Like, I know a lot of soccer players that no longer play soccer. I don't know many hockey players that no longer play hockey. Like, a lot of those people continue to play forever.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's something I hadn't considered before, but I think it's very true, at least like through my lens and the people I know. You're right. Like, people, once you start playing hockey, like, there's a high percentage of people that, man, you probably know, like, I don't play beer league or men's league, but I would argue a lot of my friends that do, they have the same passion, if not more, at that level than they might have had when they were kids. Like, they love playing, which is awesome.
And a lot of them are still like tinkering with their own games, even into adulthood, which is a lot of fun. Like, that was one of my first big hits, was like, adult league, score more, suck less. And I don't know how many people still come up to me saying like, oh man, I'm having a lot more fun scoring more and sucking less. And it's just a matter of like tinkering with their own game, even though they may not even have kids or they're just doing it for shits and gigs.
Man, I'll like, well, two things. I'll watch like my buddies who play beer league, like, if they tape their stick, like, they tape it like it's game 7 of the Stanley Cup finals. And I'm like, man, like, I've seen you play, like, the tape job's not going to make a difference. And they're like, oh, it might. And then also, like, they'll watch the game on TV and they'll watch, like, I don't know, they'll watch Cale Makar walk the blue line. They're like, oh, I'm going to try that next beer league game. It's like, okay, good luck trying that. But that's, who cares, right? That's the fun, right? It's the fun. They're still passionate about it. That's what matters.
Yeah, it's keeping the fun. And again, increasing that fun factor. I mean, that's like Don Granato with Buffalo Sabres. That was his whole shtick was like, I want to make it so the players want to be at the rink. Like, this is their favorite place to be in the entire world. And you can see, just like talking to any player, watching any player interview, they absolutely love being there. I feel like they probably get kicked out of the shooting room and off the ice sheet half the time because they just absolutely are in an environment that they want to be in and they want to improve.
A million thousand percent. And I've, you know, I have a lot of conversations with coaches at various levels. And I know you do too. And based on my experience, if I was to write the book, like the how-to manual on coaching, chapter one would be, you have to find a way to make it fun and get to the level of whoever you're, whatever age group, whatever experience level of athlete you're coaching. Chapter one, step one, is to figure out how to make the rink a destination. And if you can do that, you have a chance. If you can't do that, the rest of the knowledge you have and whatever else you have to offer that athlete from a development standpoint probably isn't going to be as relevant if you can't make it the rink a super fun place to come to every day.
People don't like doing things that aren't fun. I don't know. Do people like paying taxes? I don't think that's very fun, but I bet if you gamified it in some shape or form, it might be something they would look forward to. Now, tax is a little off the charts, but yeah, absolutely with hockey. Continuing down my list of stuff here. I'm curious from your standpoint and maybe just epiphanies you've seen from other people, maybe not just yourself, but just from the community as a whole, what are maybe some big epiphanies that young coaches are consistently having, or coaches that are finding that middle stage of their career and they're going to the next, or just parents that are starting for the first time? What are the big epiphanies that you're seeing people have through their coaching journey? Like, there's that beginner, like, oh, I don't need to do everything by the book and have everything perfect. It can be good enough and trending right. Like, that's something I constantly see. Or like, you don't have to have a drill. Maybe you just let them play and add constraint. That's something probably more for a higher level guy, or just anything around the mindset we've been kind of talking about. I'm wondering, from all of your conversations, all of your journeys, I can't imagine anyone better positioned to answer this than you.
Drills are overrated. Like, I think a lot of young coaches, they see drills and they're like, if I've got a binder full of drills, I'm a coach. It's about the details. Like, drills to me are the equivalent of a piece of chalk and a blackboard. You know, it's just a starting point. It's what you're teaching within that. It's what the drills are, a vehicle to transfer the knowledge of, you know, perhaps posture, hand positioning, what edges you're on. And I think so many coaches, you know, still just go out and they run players through patterns and drills, and they, you know, the 60 minutes is up and they're like, oh man, I crushed it today. I think that as you get experienced, coaches recognize that the drill, as you said, it's just a way of setting up some constraints to teach details, techniques, you know, the technical aspects of the game, and that's what matters. And I think that when that drill book shifts to, say, a skill or a tactic, and the coach has written down or is very clear in their mind, this is the step-by-step process in which I would teach it, and here's some of the drills I might use to teach it, but here's the process I'm going to go through to transfer this knowledge to a player. That's one of those moments for sure.
Yeah, that's massive. And for me, it's like either working on technique or you're working on hockey IQ and really nothing in between, because those are the two elements. Yeah. Either you need to gain the hard or the like ability to work your hardware in a good enough way to actually execute, or you need to figure out new ways to see the ice and new ways to think about the game and open your mind to possibility. So drills are overrated. Love that one. Are there any others that spring to mind for you?
I think it kind of goes back to the comment about getting out of the way, but it's trusting that, you know, when you're around kids every day, like when your kids go see grandma and grandpa say, oh my God, you're growing so much. And as you're like, what are you talking about? Like it doesn't sink in. Right. But through the grandparents' eyes, they actually have. It's like they're being truthful. They have grown since the last time they saw them. And I think that so much of coaching is when you're around it every day, it's tough to see those little steps. And I think sometimes you have to create, again, you've got to create space and let the game be the teacher. And I'm boring that. I want to say it was Bob Mancini that said that, or maybe it was Dave Starman, but it's so true. You got to let the game be the teacher, and you've got to sort of step back, and while you might not see the end result, you have to step back and observe that there's some good stuff going on here, and I just got to trust it. And that, I think that really speaks to hockey sense. You know, I've shared this story, and I don't want to make it about my kid, but I just think there's a good lesson here. So the best development opportunity that I've provided my son is public skating. So at public skating, we live in a little town called Squamish. They put some bumpers up, and at the far end of the rink, they put out two little nets. They put out a little plastic puck and plastic sticks, and the kids can go play a scrimmage game. And there's no structure to it. Like there's 14-year-olds, there's my little guy's four, and they just got to figure it out. So for the longest time, my little guy's like, I want to go do that. And I was always like, you're going to get hurt. Somebody's going to run you over. And so finally I let him go, and the kids are amazing. Like if anybody wants to know what our game teaches people, like it's not because my kid's special, just the older kids are so good to the younger kids. And it's just, and of course, when you're younger, that means everything, right? Just being acknowledged. But from a technical standpoint, my little guy has got to have his head up. He's got to have awareness, so he doesn't get, because he knows he might get run over too. He's got to stop and start. He's got to change direction. He's got to work really hard to catch up. There's not a coach or hockey school in the world that could provide a better development opportunity, at least at this stage, than that right there. And I guess my point is that sometimes you just like, and the best part is I'm not allowed on because I don't wear a helmet. So I have to literally be on the other side and I just have to watch. And you got to get content with just watching. And over time, once you just chill out, you're like, man, this is actually amazing what's going on right here. And I just got to, again, going back, you just got to get out of the way and let it happen and appreciate and trust that good stuff's happening.
Yeah, I love that. Just letting the environment kind of be the teacher, and a lot of self exploration on the player's part. from an expert's point of view, I think you and I both know that at the end of the day, like the game is a teacher to an extent. It's the first one making and breaking certain habits or behaviors and different things. But there's value to having someone helping and being, as they call it, the guide on the side and help mentoring through and try this. What about that? And yeah, broadening horizons and putting people in environments maybe they haven't seen or comfortable or ways of thinking. But yeah, absolutely. Always the environment's the first teacher is massive. And I know USA Hockey preaches that a ton. I'm probably sure that Canada does as well, because ADM is really just the CDM. It's the Canadian Development Model kind of ripped off and hopefully taken to another level.
I would argue that. I would say the if we followed the breadcrumbs, it's USA Hockey took a lot from Scandinavia. And they brought it here, and then they did a masterful job of recreating this user experience where it was just easy for, and it made it transparent. I think that was the power that I don't know if it was intentional, but USA Hockey made it transparent. So the parents, administrators and coaches all saw the same plan, and it kind of got everybody on the same page, which I think was really important. And I believe that Canada kind of saw that and said, man, we should maybe follow suit. That's pretty brilliant. So, and again, I say that being a proud Canadian and someone that'll always cheer for the Maple Leaf, in international competition, but I feel pretty sure that that's the breadcrumb trail and how that worked, but it is good. And just to kind of just not to go back to your last question, because I think this is important. I think the other kind of key insight is good coaches ask good questions. They don't tell, they ask, and they guide the player along to come to their own conclusion. And when you do that, and if you trust in that, it's amazing. You'll realize, holy cow, my players are pretty smart. Regardless of their technical ability, they're pretty smart. If you can make it fun and make it bring out that and let them be curious, they'll connect the dots pretty quick.
I think that's a massive piece, is like, how do you let your players take ownership? Particularly the young ones, like finding ways to own a situation. Even like a great example would be like, if you're running a power play or a PK, you know, show it to the team and then have the youngest person or some of the young folks that may not be as familiar or didn't have you last year start to explain it, where it's not just, oh, I know it, I actually have to be able to teach it. We all know if you're able to teach it, and you probably know it better than most, or you find out where your holes and understanding are really fast. So I love that element of like giving the players the ownership, allowing them to control their destiny and being able to do that. Cause at the end of the day, they're the ones making the decisions out there.
100%. And I think it makes the teaching environment a lot more dynamic. And I think it also increases the level of focus and attention, because gosh, coach might call on me, so I better be ready. I would say another, like, you know, a default, mechanism for coaches is, you know, usually when your coach or sorry, when your players, when players ask a coach, hey coach, what should I do here? What happens here? Coaches are like, oh gosh, let me tell you, I'm gonna go to the whiteboard, I'm gonna tell you. That can still happen, but maybe the default should always be, what do you think should happen here? And maybe that's the starting point we should all teach from, is ask, put it back to the player, what do you think should happen here, and learn where they're seeing it from, learn what level they're at, and then let that teaching process take shape.
Yeah, I love that point you just made about learning where they're at. Like, coaches are more like farmers. You just kind of need to understand where the crops are and what do they need, a little more nitrogen, maybe a little more water, like what do they actually need, and figuring out where that player is mentally and physically a lot of times is observing and asking questions. It's an absolute underutilized skill, but absolutely massive once you start to realize how powerful it is, and it completely changes your outlook. I know I wrote a piece for the coach's site on the two worst questions in hockey. Cause you know, we're checking for understanding. We're trying to understand where players are. Yeah. We go, does that make sense? And any questions?
Yeah.
Like, you don't get anything, right? Nothing. Yeah. You get nothing out of those questions.
Yeah. And I think it's always important to understand, as coaches, the platform we have is, you know, players, I mean, I lived this growing up. Like, I didn't want to let my coaches down. I certainly didn't want my coaches to ever feel like I didn't know the answer. So as much as our default and our human nature as coaches is just to overteach and to have all the answers, the human nature or the nature of a player is to never divulge that they might not know the answer. They're going to protect that. So if you can break through that and create an environment where the player is like, hey, it's okay if I don't know the answer. It's okay to ask a dumb question. There are no dumb questions. I think that's where some real progress can be made. But you got to create that environment.
That's the key. Again, we're going to come back to environment, whether it be on ice or off ice, right? And do you allow for questions, or, you know, what happens when a kid asks a dumb question? Does a player get on top of them, or is it more of like, oh no, here, I'm here to help you and explain, and creating that environment so critical. At the end of the day, like, I always look back to why we started sports clubs in the first place. Like, why did humans ever start sports clubs? And if you follow the breadcrumbs back, it's all about teaching life lessons and life skills to people so they're better citizens. At the University of Akron, we always talk about what we're trying to do is build taxpayers. We do not want the opposite of that. We want to build taxpayers. Like, those are the best.
That's a great analogy, and you could switch the language around a little bit there and you'd probably land on what the purpose of sports is, you know, for sure. And I think just, you know, kind of going with that whole, the whole thing with questions, we got to remember that, like, as a coach, your relationship with your players, it's like, it's a jar full of pennies. And every time, every interaction you have with a player, it's going to either add equity to that trust jar, or it's going to take a deposit. And every time a player asks you a question, that's them stepping out and saying, hey, like, I'm asking you because I trust you. And how you deal with that question is either going to add it's either going to make a deposit or a withdrawal. Sorry, it's either a deposit or withdrawal, and it's just looking at it like that. So if a player is asking you a question, like, that's like for a young player, especially if you're working with kids, I think, but I've come to learn, man, it's right up until, like, we look at NHL players, man, like, the majority of NHL players are, you know, they go to the rink every day, not knowing how long they're going to be there. Like, it's a very stressful situation, and they're walking that dance just like kids, but they're like, hey, am I going to ask a dumb question where the coach is going to say, hey, this player doesn't know anything, I got to send him down and find somebody else that does? Or are there's an environment where it's like, hey, I can ask a question, I can get better, and hopefully, you know, carve out a long-term spot in the lineup. So there's very few players in our sport that go to the rink every day knowing that no matter what they do, they're going to be okay. Very few players.
And then you think about from, like, the mental standpoint of what does that do to your performance? If you're super unsure and uncertain, like, that's terrible. The other thing around this idea of ethical coaching that I find to be massive, and terribly done by coaches as a whole, is just around ice time. And you select a player, like, especially anything younger than age 14, like, what are we doing? We're shortening a bench to two lines and someone's just sitting there for an entire game, or they get three shifts. Like, no offense, maybe if you're in nationals or something, but otherwise, like, if you look from the long-term effects and what that does on a player, it does the exact opposite of everything that we've talked about so far. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, because you can go on for ages on ethical coaching. And for me, that's the big idea of, like, you picked a team, actually play your entire roster.
Yeah. So here's my take on that. I have to do some quick math on the total amount of years that I've coached, but within those years, and I've coached, you know, minor hockey, I've coached junior A, junior B, and I've won some championships. I've had some not so great years. So point being is, I've had some years where I look back and I'm like, that was the best version of me. And there's other years where I'm like, man, I'd wish I could get a mulligan. But that's the thing about coaching. You don't, like, sometimes you have a bad year, you make some decisions you regret. And all you can do is learn from it. Right. And I say that because I think we underestimate the pressure, especially today, that is on minor hockey players. I bet you the majority of coaches who do what you just described, of shortening the bench or double shifting players, if you had to ask them on August 31st what they think about how they distribute ice time to young players, they probably all say, oh, it's I'm definitely the coach that's gonna keep it equitable and keep it fair. But then all it takes is a couple walks through that lobby, right, where all the parents are after you get your rear end handed to you, and the pressure mounts. And then, you know, a couple parents start sending in emails, and then, you know, maybe the association doesn't have that infrastructure, that right support system to say, hey, don't worry about it. You just keep doing what you're doing. And if you have a negative culture, I think beyond the team, but within a specific club, and man, I would say a lot of it today is because, let's be honest, I mean, 10-year-old, you 11 coaches recruiting harder than NCAA coaches, right? To keep the roster. And there's so much pressure because there's so much money. So you better win and you better show you can move players on. And we've created this system where there's so much pressure on youth coaches that in the moment, it is so easy to say, oh, it's just this one time, right? I'm just going to put him all this time. Tommy will be fine. I'm going to sit Tommy down for five. He'll be fine though, because I'll have a chat with him next practice, right? He'll be fine if I talk to him next week at practice. And in the moment, it's really hard. So I think what we have to do is the onus has to be on the organizations to understand that the values, the process, it has to be an organizational one, and one where the coaches come in and it's like, hey, the coaches have to trust that, hey, no matter what happens out here, I'm going to be okay. And there's a way of managing all that noise, and we're going to keep it on development. And I think the place, I'm not saying that there's not noise over with a lot of European clubs, but you know, we're fortunate. We work with clubs all over the place. And what they've done in Europe, I think, is that coaches, they've created a process and an organizational structure where a coach's success is based on player development. And that is very defined. It's measured. And I think it just comes down to you are what you celebrate. And you can say whatever you want. You can put whatever you want in the brochure. You can talk about whatever you want in the parents' meeting. If all you celebrate is wins, then in the heat of the moment, you're going to make decisions that influence winning.
Oh, you are what you celebrate. Yeah, that's a great, great line. And I think you're absolutely spot on of like creating environments. Like we're trying as coaches to protect the kids, whether it be from parents, from outside noise, from they think they should be doing this because the NHLers do this, whatever it is, like we're trying to protect the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you need to protect the coaches, and sometimes they are truly terrible, and that happens in every walk of life. Same with kids, parents, coworkers, associates, you name it. But like finding ways to protect people who are trying to do it the right way, I think is so massive. And trying to find those environments really help coaches develop, and organizations that have that allow for development at a much higher clip because they're allowing the environment to be the teacher, ethical pieces where kids want to be a part of that. You know, you get sat a few times, like, do you really want to come back to the rink, or does that hurt your love of hockey a little bit? Like finding the ways that we're helping protect everyone involved in some shape and form, and allowing the natural levels of development to occur at their stage. Like you alluded to earlier, like you go to the rink and allow them to show you how fast they can go through things, how fast can they grasp it, rather than forcing things upon, or we have to do this, we have to do that.
Yeah. You know, and I think it just, this is where it comes back to, you know, I talk about that transparency with the ADM model. And I think that if we can learn one thing from that, it's like the power in making the information accessible to everybody is that brings the temperature down. And so, you know, when you think about when our kids go to school, can you imagine, you know, you go to your parent teacher meeting in grade one, or you talk to your kid's teacher and you say, hey, what are you going to work on this year? And they're like, oh, well, like today we're going to do some coloring. And you're like, great, coloring. What are you going to do next week? And they said, oh, I don't know. We'll kind of figure that out. I'm like, oh, well, gosh, like at the end of the year, do you have any kind of, do you know what the kids are going to be able to do or what you're hoping they can do? And you're like, yeah, like, I don't know. Like we might get to like War and Peace. and War and Peace, like they're grade one. They're not ready for that. And they're like, well, we'll just kind of wing it. Like, and I think I'm not saying that to in tongue in cheek, but I think that's kind of what we've created. And I think that you look at a minor hockey organization, let's say, can you imagine if every minor hockey association this year went to their coaches, their respective levels, and said, okay, what worked, what didn't? Let's write that down. What were the drills that seemed to work the best? Let's write those down. What are the drills that you thought would work great and they didn't? Let's write those down. Did you learn anything about communication? And then we document that. And I bet what you'll find is you're going to see some common trends or threads throughout all those reporting, but then you're going to see some things that are going to probably be age specific. So then, you know, you might have the U11 coach might be coming back next year, but maybe it's a different coach. Like, how do we use that information to set the next coach up for success? And my point is, like, how do we create a curriculum like they have in school? So it's really defining to say, hey, everybody, when your kid goes to from U11 to U13, this is what we're going to work on. We're not even worried about that. And we're going to tell you that at the start of the year. This is the outcomes that we're hoping. We're hoping your kids are going to be able to catch pucks on their backhand. We're hoping that the defenseman can swing and pivot to, you know, to their left and right. And we're going to have some clearly defined benchmarks of what we're trying to teach. We're going to give ourselves permission to not focus on certain areas. And we're going to be really clear that, you know, if we lose every game this year, we're okay with that because that's not the objective. And we're not just saying that, we're setting new objectives. And I think that's what happens a lot of the time is we say, it's not about winning, but we don't make it about something else. We got to make it about something else. And you have to communicate that to everybody.
Absolutely love that. It's got to be about something else. It's kind of like my retirement spiel, my 9-to-5 job. You know, we're not retiring from something, we're retiring towards something. And I think that's
a fantastic
way to go about it. It's like, okay, maybe we're not going towards wins, but we're going towards something else. And what exactly is that? And, oh, we want to be able to do this, that, and the other. And maybe that's what we're starting to score our players on. It's like, okay, this game, we need to be able to catch 5 backhand passes or, you know, whatever it is for a small area game.
Yeah. And then measure it. Like, how are you going to test it? Now, I'm not saying we do, you know, combines in minor hockey, but we should probably be, but we should probably do some form of testing, like, you know, check for learning both verbally and physically, build that into the schedule but that can't be the coach. It's got to be the association because now, and then be really clear that that information is going to follow your player. So now when the next coach gets your player, they say, hey, like, God, Greg was, he's really good on his edges. You know, and he seems to excel in the skating part of the game, but man, I know going in that I've got to work with him on his hands and his stick skills. And, you know, but we're so scared to do that because gosh, if we share information that might hurt your chances of making the next team when it's only logical that if it's about development, of course we'd want that information and insights from the previous coach, right? Like just like if we'd want our, you know, we wouldn't want our kids going to grade 3 cold with the teacher having no insights in how they learn or what they excelled at or what they didn't excel at. Like that wouldn't be logical.
Yeah. Would not be good. I don't know. I think we can go on for more time. Is there anything else you want to make sure we touch on today? Otherwise, I think we just leave it as a cliff ender and say, you got to sign up for the coach's site to explore a little bit further and keep your curiosity going.
You know, I think the curiosity part is probably, that's probably, like you said, that might be a whole new session, but, I think that's the big key here is with coaching and our game is you have to stay curious. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, season 3 of Ted Lasso just kicked off and that's one of the main themes on that show, but man, it's so true. I think that, you know, great coaches. And I'll say this, like, I'm the luckiest guy in our game because I get to see firsthand the commitment that the best coaches in the game have to their craft, the commitment they have to how they treat people. And they're always working at it and they support each other. Like the network of coaches, it fascinates me that how these coaches that are on one hand are so competitive in such a competitive arena against each other. And the same token, they're constantly sharing information just in the spirit of self-improvement. And, And I think it's so important. I think if we do one thing at the coaches that we try to do is try and facilitate that same mindset with coaches at all levels, that this is an infinite game. This is, if you really care about this, if you really want to be a good coach, there is no finish line. It's about, can you take a step forward every day you come to the rink? Can you look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, like my commitment to my players starts with the commitment I make to myself and my own self-improvement. If I do that, I'm going to get so much out of this. My kids and my athletes are going to get so much out of this.
Absolutely. Well, Aaron, thanks again for coming on. This was fantastic. Looking forward to seeing you in Ann Arbor in the not too distant future.
Absolutely. No, listen, hey, man, we can't wait. I know I speak for our entire community. We're excited to see you on stage, and you've done such an amazing job. I think just, again, sparking that curiosity with coaches. And I think, you know, shedding a light on the lens on maybe how they see the game and understanding that, you know, there's not a one size fits all, right? That this is an art form more than a science. And so, yeah, keep up the great work, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you too. Keep up the great work at the coaches site. Looking forward to everything that you've done already and continue to do, and great resource for all coaches, whether it be hockey or not. There's so many things that dive into things well beyond just on the ice. Thanks again.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch your beauts here next week for a brand new episode.